recording?
Yes. Yep, we're all set.
Okay.
All right, welcome. Hey, this call is going to be kind of interesting because today you get a twofer. And the twofer is this. We're going to be discussing a skill that not just applies to your relationship, but interestingly, it applies to every business and profession out there that has customers, which covers just about every business and profession. And that is, it is developing the ability to listen well. What'd you say, Pete? Oh, it's the ability to listen well. That means to understand the desires, the fears, the frustration, and beliefs in the world of business, to understand those things of your customers. And in your relationship, to have your partner understanding your desires, your fears, your frustrations, and your beliefs. Now, here's what's interesting. These are not just woo-woo, touchy-feely, granola-eating concepts. These are skills that actually will grow a business in any climate, yes, even this climate, and will grow your relationship as well. Here's what I thought was really interesting. I was reading the other day, one of the really top advertising marketing executives in the country said, I love this, it is essential that you demonstrate extraordinary empathy for the people that you are selling to. He who demonstrates the most empathy wins. He goes on to say, having an accurate read on your target market's desires, fears, frustrations, and beliefs is the foundation on which that empathy is built. And empathy, my dear friends on this call, is the cornerstone of a relationship that flourishes. So it doesn't matter if it's a relationship between a business and a customer, or you and your partner with you. And I really believe that the desire to be understood, especially when we are in distress or when we are in pain, the desire to be understood in a way that is soothing and calming, that's the foundation for a relationship that flourishes. Now, here's what's interesting. How well do most couples understand each other? And to kind of test that out, I often ask couples in my practice a question, and it turns out to be a rather disturbing question for a great many couples. Here's what I'll ask. Say Pat and Terry are in my office, and I'll say to Pat, so, Pat, what do you think the top two complaints are that your partner has about you? Then I'll turn to Terry and I'll ask, so Terry, what do you think the top two complaints that your partner has about you? So after they think and respond, then I say, how confident are you about your answers? Because I'm about to check this out with your partner to see how accurately you got it right. So when I say, how confident are you that you got it right? That's when I start getting quite a bit of hemming and hawing and blah-dee-blah-dee-blah-dee-blah-dee-blah-dee-blah-dee-blah-dee. Here's what I found. It's unusual, statistically, for both people in the couple to correctly identify the top two complaints that their partner has about them and vice versa, plus have confidence that their answer is correct. Now, just think for the moment, in case you think this is a little woo-woo, if I were to ask 100 businesses this question, so what do you think the top fears, aspirations, frustrations, and important beliefs of your most important customers? And after you describe this, how confident are you that they will agree with your assessment? And are you willing to wager 6 months of profit that you have nailed this correctly? So what percent of businesses do you think would take me up on that wager? And yet they're actually making that bet every day with every interaction they have with their customers. So if your partner does not know what your top aspirations are, your fears, your doubts, your dreams, your uncertainties, your frustrations, and you don't know theirs, then welcome to normality. Now, I said normality. I didn't say healthy or good. I said normal. So there's an easy way to find out if you're normal. Simply do this quick exercise. You ask your partner if they can identify your top fears, doubts, uncertainty, and aspirations, These are the top, and the top two things that really that they do that really bug you. Then ask them how confident are they in their answer, and tell them you're going to do the same for them. So, but if you really know your partner and they know you and you nail this and you're pretty confident, you have the right answer and you're accurate, congratulations. You have already have a really good foundation of this concept called empathy. So what does it really take to understand your partner in case you're a little shaky in this area? And what does it take for your partner to really understand you? Well, I am glad that you asked. Take it away, Ellen.
All right, I will. And by the time that we're finished with this call today, I want you to have a strong reason that you can tell yourself about why you would put forth the effort to develop the skills that we'll be talking about. These are skills that are designed to help you manage your own emotional arousal better when you're listening, and they're also skills that will help your partner. They're skills that will mean that you're able to keep the dialogue open under stress, and there are lots and lots of benefits from being able to be an effective listener. A psychologist by the name of Heinz Kohut once said, "The mark of a good marriage is when only one person goes crazy at a time." And, of course, he didn't literally mean going crazy, but what he meant was that when one partner is agitated or upset, the other person can stay steady. And, in fact, I'm hoping that all of you saw that I put some handouts up, some PowerPoint slides up for today's call. And you don't need to be looking at them while we're going through this, but they'll be a good reference for you later. And I put up one cartoon that I really like, a non sequitur cartoon, and it starts with a panel in which it says, "What she heard." And what she heard him say is that it's your lot in life to stop whatever it is you're doing in order to serve my every need. And then, of course, what he actually said was, "Honey, do you know if we have any more AAA batteries?" And that's just a cute way of looking at how much we often get into ruts or can easily distort what it is our partners say to us. I have a good friend who's visiting this weekend who's not a therapist, and she was talking about when she and her husband first went to see a marriage therapist. And she said, "We had no idea before we went that we were each looking at what the other person was saying through the lens of our own experience and not through the lens of each other's experience." She said it took a while for us to learn how to really look at it from, for her, to look at it from her husband's eyes. So let me ask you guys this for a minute. What are some of the things that you think you're doing when you're a good listener? Like, what are some of the things that you actually are doing while you're sitting there listening?
Are you opening this up for them to respond to
you?
Yes,
definitely. Yeah, it is.
Well, looking at them.
So,
so eye contact.
Right.
What else?
Sometimes I choose to repeat some parts of what they say in order to acknowledge and check if I understood well.
Great. So repeating back, recapping, reiterating what's been said. What else?
Well, keeping focused on what they're saying rather than what I want to say in rebuttal.
And that's great. And when you, like, when you're keeping focused on what they're saying, is there anything you're doing in your head that helps you keep focused on your partner rather than yourself?
Yeah, and avoiding that rebuttal, which is pretty reflexive.
I don't know. Just, well, probably try, if I know I'm going to repeat back to them what they said, then I'm trying to remember what they're saying. But other than that, I'm not sure exactly what I do with my brain.
Okay, but it sounds like there's at least a little part of your brain that's thinking, I have to remember what he's saying.
Yes.
Okay.
And keep that focus.
Being quiet.
What?
Being quiet, not jumping in and interrupting.
Mm.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Give them the space to respond to you in a little more complete picture.
And Janice, when you're being quiet, do you say to yourself in your head, okay, I got to be quiet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Exactly. That's a good reminder, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
It helps to avoid that reflex. Yeah, but, yes, but, yes, but.
Yeah. What else?
Sometimes I ask, what do they need from me?
Which is a very good question. Now, Jana, what if your partner says, here's what I need from you, and you think it's outrageous? Then how do you respond? It's a great question. And if their answer seems outrageous to you, then what do you do?
Well, I have a problem of finding something that outrageous.
Or maybe they ask for something that you don't feel like you want to give.
Okay. I'm telling what I'm hearing, meaning what they are needing from me or what they need from me. And I would say that I'm sorry that I don't want to give them that thing right now, or I'm not able to give them, and that I will do something later.
Okay.
About it.
Okay. So
the first thing you do, which is really good, which is to acknowledge their request. Now, interestingly enough, by saying, you know, you don't feel like you can do it now, or maybe you don't want to do it later, you actually have started a process of negotiation, which is probably premature at that point if your partner is just in the stage of expressing what their frustrations are. And so if you just say, okay, here's what I hear you're wanting of me, okay, I'll respond to that later. Right now, keep talking about, you know, ... And it avoids a potential roadblock, which is really common for couples. If they ask, what do you want from me? And then you say, I don't think I can do that. It tends to put a squash on the dialogue. So your first reaction is perfect, which is acknowledge the request. And then just say, I'll talk about whether or not I can do that later.
Okay, so let me ask you guys one more quick question, then we'll move on, which is, if you're really honest with yourself, where might you be weak in listening, or where might you struggle, or where might you have trouble? We've named some of the good things to do, but what might be some of the areas of, okay, this is something I recognize I could develop better in myself?
Being afraid of confrontation.
Okay, so you might be wanting to feel like you're stronger at handling a confrontation that's coming toward you.
Yeah.
Yeah, and when you feel that confrontation, what do you tend to do? And this is really, really common. I'm glad you mentioned it. What do you tend to do when you feel a confrontation starting to surface, bubble up? What do you do at the next step that's not very effective? And we all have
withdraw.
Different ways of not being effective.
Yeah, I withdraw.
Okay, so you just start to get quiet?
Yeah.
Disengage? Yeah.
Or I'll just say, okay, and
end the
conversation.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. My favorite is to interrupt.
Uh-huh. I do that, too.
That's my favorite. I don't mind the confrontation.
I can vouch for that.
Yeah, I don't mind the confrontation. It's the disagreement. So I just want to interrupt the person and set them right. Confrontation's not a problem. It's when they're wrong and being idiotic.
As defined by you, of course.
Totally.
Okay.
I have a pipeline to God, and I know what's right.
All right. Well, anybody feel like...
Wait, what else do people do that? Yeah, okay.
Does anybody feel like one of their weaknesses might be trying to set your partner straight about the facts, or like trying to defend their misperceptions? Or
oh, certainly.
What else? Do you do?
Absolutely.
Yeah. What did you say?
I said certainly.
I agree. Oh yeah.
Sometimes I feel like sometimes I'm too, or I'm overly empathetic, or I think I know what my partner is thinking and feeling better than they do.
Oh,
so I might tell them, well, this is what's going on with you.
Well, you know, you could be. There's always a possibility you're right.
Well, that's true.
Yeah.
But it still doesn't go over well.
It
no.
doesn't go over well because it denies them the opportunity of expressing themselves.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Okay, so one of the things, and I'm going to go through in a minute describing four areas that really make for a totally wonderful, effective listener. So I want you to do an exercise, a little mini exercise first before we do that, which is, and I'm hoping you all can get these directions that I'm saying, but stand up for a minute, wherever you are, just stand up, all right, and take your right hand and your first finger and point it directly straight up over your head at the ceiling. So you've got your hand up in the air and you're pointing your finger at the ceiling. We won't say what finger Pete's pointing at me right now.
He's pointing at the ceiling.
Okay.
Oh, yes, you mean the first digit.
Yes, the first digit pointing at the ceiling. All right, now look up at the ceiling and start to move your hand clockwise. So use your finger pointing at the ceiling and move it clockwise.
In a circle?
In a circle. So create a circle almost like your hand is going around a clock. And as you do that, gradually bring your arm down, continuing to point at the ceiling, continuing to go clockwise, but bring your hand down and keep it going in a circle all the way until you bring it down to about the level of your waist. And as you bring it to the level of your waist, will you look at it and see what direction it's going?
Oh, wow.
What direction is it going?
Counterclockwise.
That's right.
How did that happen?
Oh, it certainly is.
So isn't that interesting?
Oh, my goodness.
So the reason, why do you think I did that exercise?
Mine isn't.
What does it have to do with perspective? Okay, so when you're looking up, you have one perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're putting it clockwise. When you're looking down on it, it's going counterclockwise. You have a different perspective on it. Now, this is just yourself, but when you're listening to your partner is going to have one perspective on the same stimuli that you're going to have a different perspective on. And that's why it's even more important to get a grip on yourself and be able to listen really, really well. So an effective listener does four things. And the first thing is what we've been talking about some, which is the listening calmly. It's like being quiet, putting a cork in it, looking at them, not arguing, not cross-complaining, not defending yourself, and really being able, as you're listening, to try to step back enough to get a look at the big picture. The second thing is recapping, and I think Jana was talking about this earlier. Sometimes a way to help yourself be calmer is to say, wait a minute, can I feed back what I think I'm hearing? And seeing if you can be as accurate as possible at feeding back to your partner what you believe they are saying to you. And we're going to come back to each of these in a little more depth in a minute. The third thing is to ask questions. And these are, when you're asking questions, you, again, are getting out of your own perspective and trying to get inside the perspective of your partner. And so you're asking questions that have to do with them and not with you. And the questions can help elicit a bigger picture. And when you do it really, really, really well, your partner will even end up having more awareness of themselves than they had when they started, because you've asked some great, wonderful, penetrating question that they hadn't thought of. And the fourth thing is empathy, which Pete was talking about at the very beginning. But the fourth thing is being able to stay with empathy and being empathic until you get that moment of soothing. You get that moment where you notice that your partner's physiology changes. And if you're paying close attention and you're looking at it well, you will see the relief. You will see that moment where they say, yeah, you really got it, or thank you for listening, or thank you for being with me, so that you have really succeeded in helping your partner not go crazy, if we use Kohut's metaphor that we talked about at the beginning. So let's go back through these a little bit more, and Pete's going to talk about what does it mean when you're listening to not take something personally that your partner is saying.
Well, it's actually a very key concept. Now, get this, and boy, this is worth the price of admission just for today's call. Most of the complaints that your partner has about you are really not about you. Now, is that good news or what? Most of the complaints that your partner has about you are really not about you. Here's what I mean. That when we complain about our partner, we're really talking about something that is idiosyncratic, unique to us, that creates pain. And that's the standard we use. Think about this. Think of somebody. I'm going to ask you four questions and answer these in your mind. Somebody you know or have heard about or read about. So just in your own mind, think of, and literally do this, think of somebody that you would say is tall. T-A-L-L. Just think of somebody that you know, you would say, yeah, that person's tall. And then think of somebody where you'd say, yeah, that person is wealthy or rich. Somebody that you would say is smart. Say, yeah, this person's pretty smart. And think of somebody that you would say is messy, they have a lot of clutter in their lives, they're disorganized, and yeah, they're just a lot of clutter, a lot of disorganization in their life. Okay, now, the person that you thought of that was tall, are they as tall or taller than you are? And that would be how many of you thought of somebody who is as tall or taller than you are? Just say, yep, or me.
Yes.
Yep.
Taller.
Okay. How many of you thought of somebody who is as wealthy or wealthier than you are?
Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. How many of you thought of somebody who is as smart or smarter than you are?
Oh, yeah.
No.
Right. Yeah, smarter than I.
As smart or smarter. And then how many of you thought of somebody that is has a lot more tolerance for clutter and they're a lot more disorganized than you are?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. So any time that we start to make judgments about other people, whether they're positive or negative, anytime we make judgments, who's the standard, who's the yardstick that we automatically use?
Ourselves.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we do it instinctively and automatically. We just instinctively say, well, if we probably should start every confrontation with our partner. Well, partner, compared to me and my impeccable standards, you are...
Right.
Because that's what we're doing. That's what we're saying. I was talking to a guy one time in my office, and we were talking about his critical attitudes toward other people. And I asked him, I said, well, do you have any critical attitudes or judgments about me? And he said, well, frankly, I do. I said, oh, what are they? He said, well, I think you're kind of fat. And I'm about, 5'11", and I weigh about 170 pounds. And he says, I think you're kind of fat. I said, well, what are the implications of me being kind of fat? He said, well, you're probably lazy, a little slothful, don't have a lot of self-discipline, indulge yourself. And I'm thinking to myself, while he's saying these things, whoa, hey, this guy's pretty good. This guy is good. But now think about this. With my size, 170 pounds, 5'11", he says I am fat. I'm fat compared to who?
To him.
To him. So do you think physically that he looks like Santa Claus?
No.
No. No, he doesn't. So physically, his body build probably is like what?
Like an ectomorph.
Like an ectomorph. Really, really thin. Yeah. So what do you think his diet is?
Vegetarian.
Vegetarian.
Yeah. Leafy lettuce and lemon juice. Heard that in a joke once.
Leafy lemon and lettuce. Now, is he the kind of guy that you would want to go on vacation with?
No.
No.
No. And that's one of the things that his wife complained about, that he was really serious, didn't have fun, and it was hard for him to loosen up. Now, think about this. All I did was give you his description of me, and you correctly ascertained, without even seeing him, you correctly ascertained what he looked like physically, you correctly ascertained his diet, and you correctly ascertained a key personality trait that he had. And yet, all I did was give you his description of me. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah, let me, and I really got this concept in a way I had never gotten it before when I first met Pete's mother. Because I grew up with a mother who spent a lot of time focusing on taking me to diet doctors, and I grew up with a very strong self-image that I was fat, and my mother was very focused on what I was eating. And so my self-image was that I was really large and fat. And when I met Pete's mom, the first thing that she said in the first conversation I had with her, she was looking at Pete, but she said, my God, she's so tiny. Well, tiny was a word I had never, ever, ever heard applied to myself. And it was like, I couldn't believe, and she's not fat herself. She's large. She's tall. She has bigger bones. And my mother, of course, was shorter than me and tinier and weighed less than me. So I really got that sense of how much we use ourselves as a standard and how much I liked Pete's mother's standard much better than my mother's standard.
I think it's really cool that when we don't take it personally, it makes a huge difference. If a couple comes into my office and we talk about what brings them there, and one person says, well, I'm not sexually attracted to my partner, and I say, what's wrong? And they say, well, their feet are too long, you know, or their ears are too big. Doesn't matter what they say. I will turn to the partner and say, you know, they're not talking about you, which is a real surprise because there's only three of us in the room. Then I will say what your partner is talking about is their imprint of what creates sexual attractiveness to them. Now, it doesn't mean there's not repercussions or implications for what they're saying. Just don't take it so personally. If you take something personally when your partner is criticizing you or judging you, here's what you won't say if you take it personally. You won't say to them, why are you saying this or why are you doing that versus why are you doing that to me? If you take it personally, you will say, why are you doing that to me? And then you make it personal, and that's when the discussions really start to get excruciating because you're taking it personally. It's not that personal. Your partner is talking about what has gotten triggered in them, and what, and somehow their hopes, their aspirations have been frustrated. If you cannot take it personally and investigate and ask questions of them, you can short-circuit a lot of bad discussions. And I might even use this example once before when I was seeing a couple, and they were getting into a discussion. I said, "How'd this past week go?" And they said, "Well, we really bypassed a tough fight. We would have had a really tough fight." I said, "What happened?" And he said to her this past week, you know, as they were arguing about things, he said, "You never do anything around here." And she was about ready to roll up her sleeves and have a three-day big fight for that kind of insult. And then she said, "Well, how long has this never been going on?" And he said, "About a week." And she said, "Well, of course, I've just been so preoccupied with so much work that I haven't gotten to things I normally get to." She said, "If I would have taken it personally right off the bat, I wouldn't have asked the question." So if you actually don't take things personally, you can start to humanize and harmonize your relationship a lot easier. The interesting thing is you probably had this skill as a three-year-old. Most three-year-olds and just about all great salespeople know not to take it personally. If a three-year-old asks for something and you say no, they just assume you didn't understand the question or you didn't hear them, and they'll ask again. And they will keep asking, and they don't take it personally like I'm flunking childhood or there's something wrong with me. They just assume, "Oh, I'll find another way to ask it," because they don't take it personally. But we do take it personally, because when our partner says something, it stings. So that's what makes it personal. But the reality is it's not that personal at all.
Okay, so let's move on to talking a little bit more about recapping. And remember, of course, that recapping helps each of you be certain that you're tracking the same conversation and that you're actually understanding or addressing the same problem. So what I want to do is give you guys a stimulus. Something that a wife might say to her husband. And I'm going to ask you to, first of all, do kind of a small, just short recap of what I say. So if I'm the wife and I say, "Dear, I went out of my way a lot for you this weekend. I took care of our sons. I cleaned the house just like you like it. And I even picked up a gift for your sister at Macy's. Later at night when you snapped at me after dinner, after you'd been out playing golf all day, I was mad and disappointed. I don't know why you couldn't hold on to the big picture." So let's say that that's what she starts off, or let's pretend it's your spouse and they start off saying something like that to you. What would be a small recap of what you just heard? Somebody?
I heard that I did all these things this today. I cleaned the house and I took care of the kids and even went and got a present for your sister. And while you were playing golf, and I didn't appreciate how you I'm trying to remember. Snapped at me this evening after I did all of that for you.
Okay. Good job. Anybody else want to recap at once?
No.
Somebody?
I'll do it. Try. What I heard you say was that you did a whole lot of stuff for me, for the family and for me today, and I just enjoyed myself playing golf, and then I snapped at you, and you didn't appreciate that I didn't see the bigger picture of what you had contributed.
Excellent. Excellent. So, you know, a short recap of this stimulus might be just you were mad and disappointed when I snapped at you.
Yeah.
A bigger one would be you went out of your way for me, so you were mad and disappointed when I snapped at you. And an even larger one might be you were mad and disappointed when I snapped at you. You hoped I would be able to remember all the things that you did for me during the day. So you can just see there's, you know, a little bit more content, but all of those are ways of feeding back and recapping what's been said. And certainly, even because I'm the one who put out the stimulus here, even though it's not a real issue for me, when the two of you were recapping, I felt better.
Mm.
And it's not even my issue, but when I thought, oh, they understand what I just said. So just knowing that you're on the same page helps a lot.
Well, see, a key in what everybody was recapping was you were capturing both the facts of what happened and the feelings. And if you just recap the facts, a person won't feel understood. When you recap the facts and the feelings, like you were doing, then a person says, okay, yeah, you got it.
Well, the good thing, I mean, the thing about that example that maybe doesn't always happen is that the person who sent the message used iMessage. I mean, they spoke for themselves. They weren't accusatory so the message to begin with was phrased in a really good way.
It was, you're right, except that I added the ending, why couldn't you hold on to
right.
the picture, right. which would be exactly the kind of hook that
right.
a lot of people would get stuck with and want to respond with, well, how do you know I wasn't holding on to the big picture?
Right.
Or they might have said, how come you're always so selfish and you never hold on to the big picture? Oops.
Or she could have gotten mad at something totally unrelated, and so it had to be decoded that was
yeah,
what she
right.
was
yeah, that
right.
takes
mad
a while
about.
To unpack. Absolutely,
right.
it takes a while to unpack.
Yeah. So let's do this now. When you're asking questions, it's important. I mean, it helps. The more you can get into an interested and curious state of mind, a state of mind that says that even though you felt the sting and you heard her say, why couldn't you, or why are you always so selfish, or you feel that sting, but what are some, using this stimulus again, what are some good questions that you might ask to keep this conversation open and going farther?
Maybe tell me about what you mean by the big picture.
Good. That's a good one.
Yeah,
yeah,
that's a good one.
That's absolutely a good one, because what they have in mind could be very different than what you and I would be thinking about.
Mm-hmm. What else might be a good question here?
Well, it sounds like this person who was out playing golf did not get something that was important to them, although all of these other things have been done. So a question might be, what else might you have needed from me? What were
That's
you looking
question
for?
Too, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you might be uncovering deeper layers of concerns or interests or frustrations.
Yeah.
Really great question.
Yeah, like I was thinking a potential good question, too, might be, if you're the one listening to this, would be to say, could you tell me more about what was most upsetting to you? Because it's not
yeah.
clear from the stimulus whether what was most upsetting was being snapped at, or what was most upsetting was the not holding on to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
Anybody else have think of a good question you might ask?
Well, what could I have done differently that would have been more helpful?
And that's a great question to ask if.
If.
Well,
yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is, when you're starting to ask questions, as much as possible, if you can leave the word I out of it, because even the use of the word I pulls it back to you, the listener, and takes the focus a little bit off the person expressing.
You might ask how important that problem is to them, like on a scale of 1 to 10.
Or even another way to get at the same thing might be to say, were you looking for more recognition from me for what you had done? But it keeps the focus on the desire for the recognition rather than what I should have done. And it's so easy to feel like, oh, we blew it, that we start saying, well, you know, what could I have done differently, and how do you want me to respond, and how, you know, all of that. And then it gets too focused too fast on the person listening, and the focus gets away from the person who's expressing.
Or does this, you could ask, is this a common problem for you or a common frustration? See, in a sense, what you're, if you don't take it personally, you could ask these questions like if you were a business asking questions about their customer.
And the beauty of a really effective question, I'm not saying all of our questions should be really effective, because you might be asking some very simple basic things just to get a bigger description, but the exquisite questions are questions in a way that are communicating through what you're asking that you're holding on to two perspectives, that you're not just, you know, reflexing and responding from yourself, and that you're genuinely interested and curious about your partner. And sometimes I say to couples, when you're able to do this well and you're able to ask good questions, you get mom and dad out of the middle of your interaction. And by that I mean two things. We all typically, you know, we all tend to bring our past experience and impose it on our partners, and so that we may be reacting from things from our past. But I also use the mom to mean misinterpretation of motives, the MOM. So when we ask good questions, we're able to tease out the motives and stop misinterpreting or stop projecting our own experience into the conversation. And we also do, and the dad is defensiveness, anger, and distancing. So by getting a grip on ourselves, we show that we're not defensive. We help our partners calm their anger. And I don't remember who was at the beginning of this call said your tendency is to withdraw. But by asking your questions, you're able to be present and communicate that, in fact, you're not withdrawing. So the last piece of being an effective listener is empathy. And empathy can be on a huge scale, and we'll talk a lot more about empathy in another call, because it's such an important characteristic. But when you respond with empathy, and when you can stay with empathy, sometimes if your partner is really, really, really upset, they're going to want to hear it three times or four times. They're not going to want to just hear it once. And it doesn't mean you got it wrong if they ask you to repeat it. It means that they're, like, really readjusting their internal state to say, okay, she gets it or he gets it. And so, and in fact, when you're sitting close enough and you're watching your partner well, you can literally see their breathing slow down. You can watch their shoulders become more relaxed. You can watch tension in the jaw. I mean, you can see that the soothing statements that you are making are enabling, really creating a physiological shift in your partner. So now for the stimulus that we just used, does anybody want to see if you could just take it one step farther? I mean, we were really close to even having empathy in it, but what might be one step farther that would communicate empathy to that stimulus? The initial stimulus was, I went out of my way a lot for you this weekend, took care of our sons, cleaned the house like you liked, and picked up a gift for your sister at Macy's. When you snapped at me at dinner time after you'd been out playing golf, I was mad and disappointed. Why couldn't you hold on to the big picture?
So your question, Ellen, is
so
what
my
now?
Question is, you know, you guys did a great job with your recaps. You did a great job with some questions. So now if you were going to take what your partner said and feed it back in an empathic way, what might you say? Or what might you want to focus on?
The fact that you've done so much for me this weekend, and I'm sorry I didn't appreciate it.
Right, so you definitely would want something in your response to say, you know, to acknowledge to the other person, yeah, you really did so much, or you went out of your way for me, or you extended yourself for me.
How about saying, on the way home from golf, I did pick up some flowers for you, and I forgot to bring them in because you've done such a wonderful job for me.
I like it. I like it.
My hero.
Yeah,
you know, let
me rent the car and get them.
Consider empathy for the speaker, or I get a little feeling of defense in that. Am I coming from my own perspective?
Well, ask him, were you feeling defensive when you said it?
Were you
not at all.
Okay.
I just overlooked bringing in the flowers.
So it sounds like he felt like he wanted to be more giving, to be extending himself more.
Yeah.
I would say I really appreciate all the things that you've done for me today, and I could see how it would feel bad when I snapped at you this evening.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. That's beautiful.
I think anything that says in a way something also like, you know, I really didn't get a grip on my impatience, and I did snap at you for something minor when you've done something much more inconvenient, something much more major, and here I was just, you know, in my own little world snapping at you for something minor, and I wasn't holding on to the big picture, and I'm sorry. So something, you know, along those lines will be, soothing and calming. So one thing that I think is very helpful at times, as you think about how you want to be as a good listener, to create your own image. That and it can be a visual image, it can be an auditory image, it even can be a kinesthetic image, but pick an image of yourself when you are really being the way that you want to be when you're listening. And the image that I use for myself is comes from an experience that we had a couple of years ago when we were in Africa, and we were working on a lion research project. And we went out into the bush one day, and we're driving around in an open-air Jeep, and we came across some cheetah. And in your handouts, I gave you some picture of first the mom and one of the baby cheetahs that we came across, and they were playing on a log. And we stopped the Jeep, and we're watching this mom, and she had three cubs, and we're watching them play. And it was like a really exciting, wonderful moment. We're enjoying what we're seeing. And then before we knew what was happening even, one of the baby cheetah jumped up on the hood of our Jeep. And I gave you a picture of one of the cheetah cubs looking right through the front windshield at me. And I was sitting closer to the front of the Jeep. And Pete and Molly were sitting a little bit behind me. And all of a sudden, I am there looking like almost eye to eye with this cheetah. And my emotions were like going crazy. I mean, I was like exhilarated, excited, terrified, And I'm thinking, God, this cheetah can jump in the back seat and kill my daughter in faster than I know, you know, what's happening. I mean, it could all be over in a second. And this is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen in my life. And so talk about high adrenaline, high energy, emotional activation. And in that situation, I was saying to myself, okay, just sit here, be calm, get a grip on yourself, watch, be curious. And before we actually even knew what was happening, all three of the cheetah cubs were up on the hood of our car and were watching us and playing with us, and we sat there for several minutes watching them. And I was, like I said, terrified and excited. And so, and eventually the driver turned on the engine and they jumped down and we were all safe and sound. But I use that as my image, so I call my image the peaceful researcher image, is my image for how I want to be when I'm a good listener, because what I want to be able to do is hold a lot of very discrepant feelings at once. I want to be able to hold my feelings, Pete's feelings, or if it's with Molly, my feelings and Molly's feelings. I want to be able to hold and recognize those. I want to keep myself calm and stay focused. I want to be watching and attending very carefully to what's going on. And so when I get stressed by in an interaction with Pete, there will be times when I just, like, will rub my knee or rub my arms and think and imagine that moment when I was able to do it. And I encourage each of you to create that kind of image for yourself, some image of a time in your life when you really were the way you would like to be during one of these tough interactions, and so that you can bring that image to yourself when you're stressed. And another sort of fun way to think about this, and I put this on a slide also for you, is, did anybody make sense of this? The slide shows in capital letters PONMLK. And did anybody make sense of that?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
Okay. Okay, well, that's great. I'm glad that you couldn't. Because that is an example of what is being put out to you sometimes when your partner expresses something to you. It may seem like garbage or something incomprehensible. Now, if you read those letters backwards, they are KLMNOP. So anybody would know, okay, this is a part of the alphabet, and it's written backwards. If you notice that. But if you don't notice it, it seems like gobbledygook. And often when our partners start, it seems like gobbledygook. And we're trying to make sense and create that sense, oh, they're really talking about KLMNOP. So to wrap us up for today, because we're getting close to out of time, I put a slide for you which also shows what you yourself will get from becoming a better listener. And if you really work at it, one of the things that you yourself will get is that you will learn that you're much better at thinking under pressure, that your cognitive capacity, your brain functioning is actually better and stronger, and you're able to do it more under pressure. You'll also, if you listen to what Pete was saying about not taking things personally, you'll stop internalizing criticism. And gosh, anybody knows that it's easy to internalize criticism. It's easy to think that we were dumb or stupid or inadequate in some way. And when we can let it sit outside of ourselves, then we don't have to take it on. We're not internalizing the criticism. We're not being so hard on ourselves. And it also increases your ability to be giving, to know that you can be generous, support. supportive, loving, without losing your pride, without losing your self-esteem, that you actually have more of an experience of yourself as being a more giving person. So let me pause with that and just in the last 2 or 3 minutes that we have left, ask you guys for feedback, comments, reactions to today or any questions that you might have.
I just had a thought. If with the example you gave of the woman saying how she felt, and if the husband had responded, you know, in a negative way, like to her comment. In other words, he had discounted what she said, or nobody asked you to get anything for my sister. How could then the wife respond to get to kind of encourage the empathy? You hear what I'm saying? Because it could really get off track very easily.
It could get off track.
If the husband responded in a negative,
right,
you know, way, then is there something the sender can do to help the listener be better?
Yeah, there are several things. I mean, one of the things that starts at a basic level is if you and your partner have an understanding or an agreement that sometimes one of you will be expressing and one of you will be listening, and that you're not going to confuse the two. And
mm-hmm.
So if you have that basic agreement, you could say to them, honey, I'm not trying to attack you. I'm wondering if you could listen. My desire here is to create repair, to get back on track, to reconnect with you. It's not to punish you or brutalize you, and I wonder if you could listen.
Mm-hmm.
And then if partner says, no, I'm not in a place to listen, then it's probably best to say, well, could you let me know when you could be? Could you let me know when it might be a good time? Another might be to give them some kind of positive stroke and then say, there's some times in the past when you've really been a great listener. I appreciate it. And, could you try to do that again now? So any other comments, questions, feedback for us, anything?
I was really interested in what the last question was about, you know, really addressing a negative response from the listener.
Yeah, that's a great one for another call. We could
do
a whole call on that.
Yeah,
I was going to say the same thing. We could do that one over.
Very negative, yeah.
Okay,
he'll feel very attacked.
Okay. We can put that on our list of future calls.
Okay.
Thanks, everybody.
Okay.
I'll stay on for another minute just to get any other feedback or comments.
Ellen will stand for a minute or two. I'm going. I'll see you the next call. I'm looking forward to it.
Bye.
Okay,
bye.
Bye. I just want a quick asking question. I have a quick question, sorry.
Sure.
The empathy, the last step and the moment of soothing, is this related with helping the partner come out from the emotional brain, like start using then the frontal cortex?
Yes.
And then be able to think about.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, when you get out of that limbic response, when you experience a calmed or soothing moment, then you're much more able to use your prefrontal cortex. You're much more able to think clearly.
Okay.
And
mm-hmm.
it's one reason why often a couple of minutes after you have that soothing exchange, you can even discuss the interaction in a more factual way, or, oh, I see what happened, or I understand that's why I did that, or, you know, it's
mm-hmm.
because the whole state of the people changes.
Yes. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay.
Anybody else? Comments or questions?
Just thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank You're welcome, and have a good time till we talk again, and definitely, you know, practice this, and I will put something on the blog, so if anybody wants to share any experiences you have, that would be great if you could share.
And also, will you be putting, are you there?
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Would you put a printable, a printer-friendly version of your PowerPoint? Will that be posted? Like you did for one of the other ones, you had a PowerPoint, but you had it condensed, so it was, you know.
Yeah, I can get that on by probably Tuesday or Wednesday of next week.
Okay, great.
But I don't know if I can do the photos, but I'll put all the text ones.
Okay, great.
Thanks a lot, Ellen.
Okay. Well, have a good week.
You too.
Okay.
Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.
Good week.
Bye.
Bye.